Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I find the cover photo the most excruciating part of the book because I hate having my photo taken. We tried so many when you're looking down the barrel. And I just look awful. I hate myself. I don't want to do it.
Matt, I think for your next book, I think there's a very simple way to approach this. So you're looking down the barrel, you're on the cover of the book, just staring deep into the camera's eyes. One word for you, shirtless.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of On Jimmy's Farm. This is the podcast where we discuss environmental issues and try and give everyone a slice of the good life. Now, it is an absolute cracker of a day. I'm just walking along the paths in the veggie garden and we're just starting to plant out at the moment because the weather's picked up. It's beautiful, sunny, a bit windy, a bit cold still, but the ground is starting to warm up. So we've just been turning over the soil, making a nice seed bed, getting everything ready. Ready to plant out the new season's veggies, which would be fantastic. Oh, look, there's a lovely ladybird there. Hello, ladybird. Now, you look at ladybirds, and you always think, oh, they're really cute. And you always think of them in storybooks and stuff, but they're the friend of the gardener. Come on you go. And they are just voracious predators. You know, they're not these little cutesy little things. They are just unbelievable killing machines when it comes to eating greenfly and aphids, so I want plenty more of you guys around. Now, today we have got two fantastic guests, two of my old buddies. Now, the first is Matt Tebbett. He's a fantastic chef, and you would have seen him presenting shows like Saturday Kitchen. He also co-presents Food Unwrapped with me, which is a fantastic show if you've ever seen that. He's a wonderful guy, Matt. I've known him for many, many years. And joining Matt is the wonderful Ollie Smith. Now, Ollie is just a force for good. He's one of the greats in the wine and drinks world. He's a regular columnist for lots of magazines and newspapers, and also is a regular fixture on Saturday Kitchen as well. We have a lovely chat. We talk about all things food, food trends, diets, fads, myths, and what the future holds. Even veganism, all these sorts of stuff we discuss. And these two guys have got a really broad understanding of the food system and what's going on. They've really got a finger on the pulse. I hope you enjoy the chat. It's a wonderful walk down memory lane hooking up with these two guys again. It's lovely. They are lovely guys. And I will see you all back here at the Veggie Patch for a bit of planting. Right, here we are. Ollie Smith and Matt Tebbett. Thank you so much for joining me on my podcast. Welcome.
We love it.
What a pleasure. What a pleasure, Jim.
But also, out of your busy, busy schedule. So, Ollie's frozen.
Brilliant.
I've frozen. I'm back. This was the great start. I literally froze in a digital glacier and I'm now emerging like a weird caveman. Hello?
Now, Ollie, where are you? Because your Wi-Fi's not brilliant. Where are you?
I'm backstage at the Ideal Home Show, Jimmy. I've just roared on stage pouring wine at people and I've raced into a little room. And here I am, immersed. I tell you what, it's lovely to be back out though. Seeing the crowds back on stage, terrific.
Yeah, it's awesome. And Matt, you aren't feeling very well, are you?
I'm absolutely fine, Jimmy. How very dare you? I'm invincible and I'm not feeling 48 at all. Oh. I had quite a busy weekend. When I say busy, I mean I drank quite a lot on the weekend. Yeah. And you know when one day goes to the next day, goes to the next day. And then Monday I went up to see my daughter who was playing a band, her band, in the Ned in London, and got overexcited again. And then I was shouting and screaming at her, you know, in a good way.
Yeah.
And then I've lost my voice.
Oh no, so you're pretty exhausted. But Ollie just looks radiant.
Look at that chiseled jaw.
And do you know what?
Yeah.
When it comes to food, I often watch both of you when you're on at the same time on Saturday Kitchen. You're like the R2-D2 and C-3PO of food. You're C-3PO because you've got that golden glow. And you probably speak a thousand languages. And you're quite posh. Matt, you're definitely R2-D2. Because you've got those strong little legs, you make lots of whistles and clicks, and then you've got a mysterious third leg that appears.
Yeah. That comes out on the weekend.
Oh, that third leg when times are trouble.
Yeah. And you can wheel off quickly.
I quite like that analogy.
But listen, as you are two movers and shakers in the food world, I wanted to talk to you.
About food
trends. Matt, because we've worked together for many years on Food Unwrapped.
Which is coming back,
absolutely, for another season.
Congratulations.
Which is all good. And Ollie, you've written for umpteen different newspapers, published books, been on stage, been on TV, in the world of wine and drink. I really want to talk to you about trends in drinks because that's often forgotten about when we talk about food. It's always seen as the secondary, but it's not. It's a massive industry. So for you guys, what have been the sort of really big stick out food trends of the last sort of 10, 15 odd years, you think? Because I can think of a few.
Well, I think in wine, rosé's been on the rampage, but that's mainly because of Matt's big weekends.
You're welcome.
But I'm going to go straight into bat on English, you know, English produce, English wine, because, you know, there's some great Welsh wine as well. Anchor Hill Estates are fantastic. But English stuff up near where you are, Jim, actually, you know, I think of Flint wines. And then in Essex, you've got that amazing climate, the rain shadow that delivers just amazing Bacchus from New Hall.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks of the fizz when it comes to English wine. But the trend I'm seeing is still white wines, is Bacchus. So I'd say rosé in general has gone on the rampage. But as far as English wine goes, this great variety called Bacchus. It smells like elderflowers. It tastes like somebody is squirting an electric grapefruit into your eyeball, and it makes you disco dance.
I hope you're not expecting anything like that from me, Jimmy.
No.
Quite frankly.
Talking about the wine, I will be honest. Say 15 years ago, English wine, would have been seen as a bit of a joke. The idea of going, oh God, it's terrible stuff, really expensive. But the vineyards I've been to now, and there's locally, Ed Sheeran's just planted a vineyard as well, just down the road. Everyone's getting into wine. But now it's a real contender. So that is a big food trend, the last 15, 20 years, definitely. You know, they're actually taking British wine seriously. But what about the grub, Matt? What have you seen? All the years you've been doing Saturday Kitchen, what's the things that you think, wow, this is a massive trend?
So over the last 20 years, I think the thing that's changed is that seasonality is front and center of people's minds. And that's the sort of the general public as well. I think on the whole now, a lot of people will question, is it in season? Will it be tasty? The locality of it, how far away does this come from? The eco-credentials is a huge thing now. I mean, that's more of a modern thing and, you know, shipping avocados around the world, etc. So the ethics of food is very big. I mean, in terms of style, the biggest shift and the most exciting shift is the fact that food has left kind of the preserve of elitism and has gone down to, it's food that essentially you could go out and eat at fantastic restaurants and just have small plates. It's the small plate thing I'm getting to, where you could have six little sort of tapas affairs. It's fantastic. It's not necessarily Spanish, although I'm calling it tapas, and you can graze. And that's the conviviality of that and the choice that it gives people is enormous. And it's so much more welcome than that traditional fine dining, brushing down tables between courses nonsense, which I can't abide.
Yeah, you don't like brushing down. You don't like crumbing down.
No, I don't.
Cleanliness in general.
From me.
I'm angry about it. Yeah.
I want to leave a table after a really good lunch, like a sort of some crime scene.
Yeah,
basically.
I've been to lunch with you and it either looks like the tablecloth looks like a Jackson Pollock or it looks like a map of the Battle of the Somme. It's one of the two.
That's exactly what it needs to look like. I want breadcrumbs. I want red wine that's been spilt. I want white wine thrown over that to try and get rid of that red wine.
Yeah.
It has to be a mess.
Autographs on the napkins, loads of autographs, mainly from people we've just met.
And math lunches start when you go in and it's daylight and you come out and it's dark.
My friend Mitch Tonks has a great line about lunch starts on a Friday lunchtime, and ends in Monaco on Tuesday.
There's great drinking stories, weren't there? Peter O'Toole and I think it was Peter O'Toole and Richard Harris, that famous one where they started drinking in London, woke up in Paris, and one of them said to the other, "How did we get here?" And it was just this never ask.
True. If you go to lunch with you two, you've really got to take your passport, haven't you, really?
Exactly.
It's a wise move.
And they are the best lunches. And many years ago, I was doing a thing with Cleo Rockus, you know, Kenny Everett fame. Yeah. And she was telling me back in the 80s, her and Kenny used to have a Friday passport lunch where he would make her take a passport with her to lunch. They would go, they would get smashed. They would then go to an airport, look at where the planes were going, where did they fancy? And then they'd go there for the weekend with great regularity.
I think Matt's laughed so much, he's knocked his phone off his chaise longue there.
Yeah, he did.
And I bet you have got a chaise longue.
I don't have a chaise longue, so I don't.
With a cup holder on the side. I bet you have. You know, I think when it comes to food trends, one of the big things that I think has changed is when farmers markets took off, you know, when you used to go to the NEC Good Food Show and there'd be a specific area for the small producers. Farmers markets, every little town had a farmers market. They've sort of died off slightly and then turned into food markets where you go and eat something for lunch. You get a falafel or you get sort of a whatever it is. But the interesting thing is that those sort of peripheries of the food industry have now become the norm. So now you're getting the supermarkets doing Gloucestershire Old Spot pork, or you're getting the, you know, all those local brands, which has been a really good thing. But what about avocados? Avocados, I mean, think about it. My mum still calls them avocado pears.
So does mine.
But they are everywhere. Smashed on toast. 1993, was it Bill Granger really made the avocado hit the scene?
I think Bill first squeezed an artichoke into our faces. I think that was what happened. And we loved it. Yeah. And I think it's really interesting, though, to the point you make about things, you know, filling the mainstream, the middle getting bigger, if you like. And it is, on the one hand, it's really good. But on the other hand, you know, looking for trends of the future, as far as drinks goes, I'm amazed at how rapidly we've all embraced the idea of kind of non-alcoholic, that whole sector of no and low. Yeah. I thought the idea of creating a non-alcoholic gin or a non-alcoholic whiskey, it's kind of, I don't really get it because, you know, I want something different. I don't necessarily want whiskey without alcohol because, you know, whiskey's got alcohol in it. And I kind of understand why you might. But what I'm really kind of knocked out by is the low booze beers. They're really where it's at. They're totally amazing. Like Lucky Saint's amazing. You know, the Brooklyn Brewery's got them. I mean, there's just so many now that are of a standard. The small beer company, have you come across them? I'm wondering where this is going to end up, though, because, yeah, they are brilliant. And I'm just thinking, what is going to happen? Because we're going to need something to fuel Matt's lunches. And if there's no booze left, how's that going to work?
the thing is, when you say of the low alcohol drink sector, the beer side of it, have perfected it and they've got amazing drinks. I've got always low alcohol or zero alcohol beer in my fridge because if I've had a busy day outside and I want a beer drink, I want that lovely hit, maybe lunchtime, but I've got to go back to work or whatever, I'll do that. But I've also got full strength beers as well. Don't worry, Matt. You're looking disgusted at me. But I do like that because that first hit, amazing. But when it comes to the spirits, I think they are at the early stages of vegan food. When vegan food sort of first hit the scene and it was like, this is terrible. That's not a burger. That's not a sausage. That's not all those sorts of things. I think the spirit world, the zero alcohol spirit element isn't quite there yet. It just, for me, tastes a bit sour or not quite.
Do you know what? Although you say that, I tried, was it you, Ol, that recommended the Zero Tanqueray?
The Tanqueray Zero Tanqueray is amazing.
I thought it was really good. Really good. Because I've by the time you mix it with your tonic anyway, you still got that gin kind of taste. Yeah. But you don't have... I thought that was one of the better ones I've ever tasted, actually.
I think there are some isolated examples. So Everleaf, I think, do a really good job. The drinks are very textural and they're sustainably sourced. They're botanicals. They're great topped up in long drinks. But on their own, there's one called Forest. And it's the first time I've had something that I thought, it doesn't taste anything like whiskey, right? It's more like sort of saffron. It's got this wonderful exotic character, but it's a thick, rich texture. You stick a nice spherical ice cube in that, and a big heavy glass.
Yeah.
And you just think, you know, I'm not a million miles away from the same kind of vibe. And I think we're going to start seeing it coming. I agree with you, Jimmy. I think they're not there yet. But Everleaf are good. Calenia are pretty good. The Tanqueray Zero is good. They're coming. But I think watch this space, because a lot of the brand leaders, the market leaders, I'll taste them and I'll think, well, I don't get it. I just don't understand how it's that expensive and there's this much hoo-ha about it. I'd much rather go for something like Mother Roots. You know, she does a brilliant ginger. Have you tried that? That's unbelievably good. Just topped up with some soda, ice, big stick of rosemary in it. Man, it's enlivening.
Henry Chevalier started making those sort of shrub cordials and stuff like that, which I really love.
Yeah.
But the other thing I haven't really got my head around was, do you remember that sort of the vinegars you'd have as a shot before you'd have another drink and stuff like that?
Like a pickleback.
Those little pickle shots. I didn't really, because I just...
You'll have to educate me on this. Before you had another drink. What's the point?
Well, it's kind of a jolt. And the flavour combo, I saw someone doing this the other day and they kind of described it as tasting like a Big Mac when they had, I think it was Big Zoo actually, he had a shot of pickle juice.
Yeah.
And then he had like a shot of bourbon. And I can kind of see, you know, if you want to make the flavour of a dirty burger, then fine. But I kind of like it because it kind of sets you alight and it makes you think, I need a drink.
What, like,
and then you
like
do it again and it seems
vinegar
to work.
Wood, really.
Yeah, that's an interesting food fad, isn't it? Because we talked about fads that have come along and changed the way we eat, you know, like gastropubs, liberating food so it's for the masses. But what about fads that have just been stupid or things you think, oh, come on.
How long have you got?
I try to put them out of my head, to be honest. Let's talk about fads.
I think I'm seeing, well, it's died off a bit. At one point, I was seeing pea shoots. I like pea shoots, but I was seeing pea shoots with everything. You know, pea shoots on the side of plates nonstop. And I'm just thinking, oh, God, if I see another pea shoot.
I always thought, you know, the microcress that you get on a lot of things, until I got sent away with Food Unwrapped, actually, Jim, to the guy who produced them. I thought that was nonsense as well. And then he explained to me that each one of those little tiny cress, it's like the equivalent of eating 40 heads of broccoli. You don't get the fiber, but the vitamins that you get out of it, they're incredible. They're like supercharged little things. So they're not just pretty sort of garnish on the plate. So that was quite interesting. Foods, what other fads have we got at the moment? Fermenting is starting to annoy me because people are fermenting literally everything now. And there are some things that benefit from it. And there's other things that you go, what the hell? Why would you ferment that?
Yeah.
I don't get
why
it.
Why would you bother? I haven't got a problem with vegan food or vegan food.
Yes, you
do.
You're a farmer. Of course you do.
It's when you are copying something like bacon or sausage.
Yeah.
I think... The world of vegan food is so interesting and groundbreaking. Why try to emulate something that is highly processed? You know, you could create something so much more spectacular.
My problem with a lot of vegan food, not all of it, but a lot of it, is the heavy processing. You think, why, if you're going down this track of I'm not eating meat to save the world, then why would you opt for a mass-produced item from a factory that's had so many processes going on in it? You're not actually gaining anything. So, you know, whether you could just eat vegetables. That's my issue with so much vegan food. But then, you know, I suppose people will argue that, well, they want the taste, they want the texture of meat that they miss, but they don't want the guilt of it. So I don't know.
The familiarity of eating meat is important, but also the world of veganism has created an amazing opportunity for food manufacturers. It's just opened up the market, even in drinks as well, because I think when people become vegan, they don't realize about alcohol and the use of wine and things like this.
Yeah, ox blood and goodness knows what else has been used to fine and filter wines. And it's one of those things, funny, I've just written a column about this because fining and filtration, you know, over the years, they use egg white, albumin, casein, isinglass from fish bladders. There's a lot of it, you know, kind of weird. It sounds like it's sort of a special interest, really, doesn't it? Quite oddly kinky. I don't know how they discovered all these things worked, but I think what I'm seeing now is much more fining agents like bentonite, which is a kind of clay, which is much more, you know, it's easy to use, it's vegan friendly. I think, you know, wine growers, they get away with some amount of stuff because they don't have to label what they're using to fine and filter. Now, I would go and say, I don't think that's great. I think every consumer deserves to know exactly what's gone into everything they're going to consume. And I really salute, you know, labeling it clearly for vegans so they can see. But the thing in wine that kind of gets me when I kind of think back, you know, I love there's so many, the spectrum of flavors out there, right? And the kind of backgrounds of the whole thing. It's never ending. That's why I love it so much. But when we latch on as a kind of society to, for example, Prosecco or New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc or in the 80s, you know, Muscadet, I don't mind because I get it. They're all lovely. But it's at the expense of so many other similar, amazing, great varieties, places. And then we lose track of the really important stuff we need to talk about, for example, like monocultures, sustainability, all of the things that in the background, really, I feel like I should probably talk a lot more about. And I'd relish the chance to do that because we're in a situation now, we've got a lot of pressure on household budgets. I totally see that. At the same time, as a society, as a planet, we need to address how we step forward, because I'm not entirely convinced that this is a sustainable model as it's going now.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
No, yeah, you're right. What we eat and drink has a huge effect on the planet and its climate.
Sorry, I was just going to say, Jim, as far as vineyards go, all I'd really love to see, to be honest, is just a little bit more sensitivity. You know, don't necessarily plow up between the rows, allow cover crops to grow, encourage insect life particularly. Biodiversity can really be encouraged with particularly biodynamic farming. And it doesn't need to be kind of extraordinarily radical and mixed farming, you know, all the way. It can be a gesture. But if everybody makes the gesture, it adds up to a whole huge amount of change that's positive.
Presumably, I've never thought about this actually, Ollie, but presumably vineyards are one of those places where they absolutely keep it immaculate and scrupulously clean. Like you say, they plough everything up. They don't want any insects affecting those grapes at all.
Yeah, historically that was true. And I think only now in the last, I don't know, 10, 15 years, I remember going to my first biodynamic vineyard in Chile and probably, 15 years ago, and lots of journalists on the trip, you know, myself included, being generally wowed by the idea that other animals and insects would be encouraged in a vineyard. And I'm glad to say it is becoming more common and people are embracing the idea of a kind of a healthier ecosystem all round. And it's not by stripping up vines and not making wine. It's just by doing it in a way that actually probably arguably a little bit more straightforward if you're blessed with the right climate. So I'm not saying that everybody with an English vineyard is going to find that very straightforward. But if you are in the right place, Chile is a great example. Not a lot of mildew, very dry, a great possibility to be more friendly. Then why wouldn't you do it?
Absolutely. And when you look at Australia, the water usage is that I spoke to one agronomist and he was saying that if I slightly stress this plant, I can produce more grapes on the same amount of water by putting it through the water stress. And you think, well, actually, you're producing the same grapes, twice as much grapes with less water. Looking at biodiversity as actually a gain rather than a negative, as thinking, rather than thinking about the pests, you're thinking about the predators and creating more biodiversity, making a much more stable environment. We're only just learning that. But unfortunately, when you're growing the same crop in perfect rows, they like to make it look neat, you know? And so that's, we need to get out of that sort of culture, I think. And I think the consumer's starting to see they can actually have an effect on the planet by the things that they buy and how they shop. And I think people are becoming smarter when it comes to shopping. Mm. The other food fad, I think, which is, it's to do with alcohol, is that we swings and roundabouts when it comes to what we like and then what we hate. Chardonnay was massive. And now it's like anything but Chardonnay.
I feel so sorry
for Chardonnay. I think an unoaked Chardonnay is delicious.
It's still massive for me. Don't worry about that. But I love the oak. I want those heavy, rich, buttery, oaky Chardonnays that everyone hates. Everyone goes through that stage, don't they? I think. It's like, I think rosé is going to have the same in a couple of years. I've started drinking rosé. It's getting quite tasteless because everyone wants those super pale,
southern French ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bingo. This is what happens. This is what happens. The character gets stripped out to appeal to an even wider audience. So it happened with Pinot Grigio. It's a classic example. You can find amazing Pinot Grigios laden with flavor, lower the yield, you know, just take a bit more care when you're actually creating the wine and shepherding it through the fermentation. But if you're doing it on a massive scale and all you want is yield, yeah, you're totally just going to rinse out all of the joy and love. Not to say all Pinot Grigio is bad at all, but you're bang on that. And I think we've got to watch it with things like rosé, because the more popular it gets, the paler. You know, everybody wants it more nuanced, more subtle, but somehow the prices creep up. You think that just doesn't wash. I want to know that I'm drinking something. I want something with as much character as Jimmy and Matt combined.
That's a terrible...
That's too much for anyone, Matt.
The other thing is that over the last 20 years of working in television is that I haven't seen so many shows about diets and fads and all this kind of stuff. What's your take on the diets that are just thrown out there all the time? I mean, when I was growing up, there used to be the Cambridge diet or the cabbage diet, and that was about it.
Yeah, and then there was like the Montignac method and, you know, no carbs. And what was that other one? There was that one with, I can't remember what it was Atkins. Even called, but Atkins, yeah. I mean, I'm somebody, my weight's fluctuated over the years, and, you know, I think I've landed on a fairly simple solution, which is eat a bit less, go to your personal trainer twice a week, exercise, and don't drink like a thirsty horse. Yeah.
Isn't it weird?
That works. That just works for me, but I'm not going to speak on behalf of other people. But, you know, I know that when I'm exercising regularly, I feel better. You know, I can fit into my regular wardrobe rather than my embarrassing wardrobe and all the rest of it. And I just think, you know, in life, we're creatures of habit to a degree, but I think it's having the honest conversation with yourself and making it a sustainable, ongoing, it's life, isn't it? It's not cutting things out necessarily. It's just, you know, embracing what you're ruling in. My dear friend Dave Lamb once said to me, just, you know, think of the things you love and just make the middle bigger. Just make the middle. And I thought, yes, I don't need to think about stripping stuff out. I need to embrace a bit more exercise, a bit more of a healthy attitude. And maybe, you know, I don't cut out the wine. I love the wine.
I think if we're honest, we're all pretty lazy and we're just looking for that magic answer.
Yeah, the solution.
If I start eating quinoa, or if I start taking more sort of bacteria, it's going to help me lose weight. If I'd, you know, all these things, but these things only tend to work in their natural environment because there's a whole host of other things going on. Particularly when you look at like these blue zones.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not just the food, it's the culture, it's the environment. There's much more going on. So I think the diet fads is a nonsense.
Yeah, I agree, Jimmy. And I think that the other issue with diet fads for me is that they're goal-oriented. And that may sound sort of strange and counterintuitive, but if you think, well, I want to get to this weight, or I want to get to this look, or I want to fit into those trousers, what tends to happen is once you've achieved it, I'm speaking personally from my experience, is you do it and then you go, right, I'm off the leash. Way!
Yeah. And it just doesn't, that's exactly what I do.
Yeah. I think the longer approach, the long game has got to be, think of the Wogan model. You want to be doing this in your 70s and, you know, ideally in your 80s, don't you? You want to be there. You want to be having fun, you know, with as wide an audience as possible. It's sniper's alley between 50 and 60 for us guys. We've got to look after ourselves.
What a great phrase. But no, you're absolutely right. Do you know what? So my little spell in hospital in January, it really kind of woke me up, because I thought, because you're laying there and you're not feeling particularly good about yourself or life and you're feeling pretty awful. And you kind of question your lifestyle and how much you drink and how much you eat and what time you eat and stuff like that. So I kind of started to tailor that now into the lifestyle. And it makes a big difference. Not going for a Chinese at 11 o'clock at night is a really good thing. A, you sleep better. B, you wake up feeling much better about life and you don't have indigestion all night and you're not piling in all those calories and just laying on it. So I've noticed that doing things like that, cutting down and learning to stop eating, that was another one for me. Stop eating when you're full rather than just plowing on and finish the plate. And because I've always done that. And I remember, I mean, somebody on a crew once said, you are literally like a Labrador puppy. You're just keen to please, and you're just literally everything in your sight.
But that is... and you chew the furniture. But the thing is that...
He does chew the furniture.
But you have got...
And he's not house trained.
No, but you've got the chef's curse, haven't you? Because a lot of chefs, they live in the world of food. They're surrounded by food, and you're constantly tasting and eating. And it's a delight to do that. And particularly if you're filming and there's stuff around, it's hard not to pick at it.
Well, I do. I mean, we've always said, I mean, whenever we're on set together,
and there's like prop food in front of you, I'll just eat it.
Yeah, I remember.
And they'd say, can you, Matt, can you stop eating the bloody prop?
I remember we were filming in China and you'd done your piece to camera and you were sitting on the same table as me. And then I had to do a piece to camera and I had these, I think they were fried aubergines or something in front of me.
Oh, they were delicious.
Yeah, but continuity went out the window because your hand kept appearing. You were eating the props. So by the time I finished my piece to camera, half the food had gone. He's like, Matt, stop eating the props.
I will literally eat anything in front of me. So I've started to try and stop myself, be a bit more disciplined, a bit more self-control about that, to be honest. And booze is a tricky one. So I can be quite good in a week. And the trouble is, it's like going back to the old, you know, hey, don't I look good? I can fit in this shirt. Now I'm off the leash. So on a weekend, I go nuts.
Yeah.
So essentially, I binge drink, which I think is not particularly good for you either.
Well, I think
it's not ideal. It's not ideal.
There's quite a lot of us.
I think little and often is the advice. You
know? Yeah, that's probably.
I'm glad we're giving medical advice as well.
But you know what? What is lovely is the show that you both do on Saturday Kitchen. Is that is one of the best hangover cures, you know? If you've been out on a Friday night, I think, right, let's put R2-D2 and C-3PO on. and let's see what they've got on. It might be Obi-Wan Kenobi, who knows? But that's a great show. It's a real mixture of interesting guests, and then you have guest chefs on there, their new restaurants opened or whatever it is, new cookbook. Who have been sort of standout guests that you've gone, I can't believe we've got them on?
I remember Ollie and I were very excited about Tim Peake, astronaut.
Yeah.
Yes!
An actual
spaceman!
Spaceman!
Oh, yeah! Yeah! Well, I think we did keep in rehearsal saying, Tim Peake, spaceman!
Spaceman!
Which we had to rein in from. So actual that was, Buck Rogers.
I'm always, like, when I get excited about somebody coming on, I call them by their both names.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, rather referring to Gary Barlow as Gary, I was like, it's Gary Barlow. Hello, Gary Barlow. What can I get you, Gary Barlow? And it becomes a bit embarrassing.
Gary Barlow's got such a lovely voice when he's really calm, and then he laughs.
Nice and calm, calms you down.
He goes, almost like a northern version of the Count Dracula from Sesame Street.
That's very good. He is such a lovely fella. And the nicest people we ever have on are the ones who have just, they got nothing to prove, and they're just super cool. And this is what I've done, or this is what I do. And I'm quite happy with that. Anyone in life who's trying too hard is a little bit mortified.
Yeah. So, what about stuff going wrong?
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, it was one week when Matt was, I think you were away for some reason, and Michelle Roux Jr. was hosting. But it came to me doing the wine in the studio, and one of the researchers had forgotten to put out the bottle of wine. So I had to do live on BBC One. Imaginary wine taste, literally like swirling my glass going, well, if it was here, it would taste like this. And that was a hoot. But that, I love that because it shows the show is live. And the thing I love about when things do go a bit awry is that Matt is so, you're actually very naturally really funny. And I think that's so warm for the viewers at home because you always own it as well. You always say, oh, yeah, I've thrown that over there. Well, that's somewhere on the floor, isn't it? And you kind of say it how you see it. And it works a charm. Because the worst thing would be to see the panic in your eyes, which I know is secretly there, by the way.
I mean, the last two weeks on the trot, I've used a blender, and on both occasions, it's worked in rehearsal, and on both occasions, it doesn't work in live. And so you're just stuck there, and you can't do the rest of the recipe because you've got lumpy things in a blender which aren't going to come together. So you just have to ride it. So, and I think it's very funny usually, and I really couldn't give a monkey's.
Yeah.
And B, I think worse than what happens at home anyway. And people, I think they like that because here's TV and they're all supposed to be slick and they've copped up as well. And it's just, and that's life, and that's what makes live fun. I can't bear it when you watch cookery shows and everything is just perfect because it ain't the case. It really, really isn't.
It's true. Because we've seen that highly polished finish and cooking shows are filmed like natural history shows where it's just tumbling this and everyone's got all these amazing friends that come round and all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
And it's not really...
Yes.
Where are the arguments? Where is the annoyed chef in the kitchen where everyone's piled into the kitchen drinking wine and getting in the way? That's never the case.
Where's me stumbling in the background, treading on Lego?
It's true. It's true.
Nothing more painful.
It's an interesting one because the food and cooking shows, it's such a big part of TV now. And the way we eat is such a big influence on the natural world. Do you try to do more for the natural world and the stuff that you do and the things that you promote?
In terms of what? Ingredients?
Food waste, ingredients, ethical eats, what wine to buy that's better for the environment?
I definitely do. I mean, I'm a patron of the Bumblebee Conservation Trust, which I love. And so I do try as much as I can with wine to find producers that are operating at least sustainably, at least with minimal use of anything murky. And where I can, I try and encourage, you know, wine growers to make healthy and positive changes. So yes, definitely from my point of view, Jimmy, I think that stuff is really important wherever possible. Sometimes it doesn't always fit. Life's not perfect. But wherever possible, I think if that's your bandwidth, that's got to be a good thing. And fair trade and all of that stuff, I think, is part of the responsibility of being, you know, being honored with the voice and being, you know, having people trust you and listen to you, that you should try as much as possible to give that bandwidth, to give that spotlight to as many as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't give a monkey's, quite frankly. I'm joking.
You've got a whole show about veganism. Not that you're a vegan or you're saying everyone's vegan, but it's the idea of looking at what we eat and eating more veg and having more of a balanced diet.
That was exactly the point. And the show's, the original working title was Eat More Veg, or V is for Veg. And it was to get people, I suppose, like me, maybe you guys, maybe not so much you, Jimmy, being a farmer, but yes. I mean, I have this conversation with my son, and he says, I just eat so much meat, and I expect to, and he's not an eco warrior by any stretch, but it's just ingrained in them now that the diesel car I have out the front is killing the planet. He's incensed with me about that. He wants me to go and get an electric car, although I've got 3 years to run on the contract. So going back to the vegetarian show, it was about eating more veg and not missing the meat between, say, a Monday and a Friday. And then the meat we do eat needs to be a better quality, preferably local, and from those sort of small farms, which, you know, and I will argue, and I'm sure you will, Jim, till you're blue in the face, that is not the issue when it comes to methane production or what have you. You can't tell me, I mean, I'm surrounded by little Welsh hill farmers and what have you, and you can't tell me that is in the same category as those mega farms that you see in South America, in North America, and wherever else it is.
We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, exactly. And the farmers get criticised beyond belief for all that, and I think that's absolutely wrong. But yes, I think we should eat more veg. I think we should be very careful where we buy our fish and what we're buying. So yeah, I mean, you do. And in terms of, you know, the plastics, that's a huge thing now. I got really angry during the lockdown. Used to get these, you know, very kindly, got lots of restaurant boxes sent. We bought quite a lot. Initially, the plastic that was used in those things was incredible. And you would fill a recycling bag in one hit easily with things, such stupid poxy little things in a little pot that would just instantly be thrown away. So that changed, I noticed, as the lockdown went on and things were recyclable and stuff like that. So I think people have very much getting into that sort of frame of mind now. But I think we're probably 10 years away from where we should be.
Yeah,
I think my kids' generation and your kids will be the ones who really take it forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to do, but the next generation is really going to accelerate it.
Yeah, because it's in them now and they care about it. Whereas we're kind of just, you know, I remember as a 16-year-old, I was a member of Greenpeace, because my geography teacher was part of it. And I thought, this is a really good thing. And I wanted to go to the rainforest and get involved. And then that got dropped. And I didn't think about it when you go into uni and you go into life. And those things just sort of disappear because that's your young self, you know, wanting to be a little bit kind of, I don't know, worthy and save the world. But I think now that the next generation, it's just there. It's just in them. And they look at things and go, well, why would you have that when I can have this? And it's second nature, which is what it needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. You were going to say something, Ollie, but you got...
I was absolutely hypnotised like a rattlesnake caught in the headlights with Matt's words. I thought it was really well put, actually. The thing I was going to say is that, you know, I totally agree that the next generation have it in them. They do make, you know, very wise choices more often than perhaps our generation has. But I think what we're seeing at the moment, you know, the last few years with the global pandemic, the war in Ukraine, you know, there's so much desperation globally. You know, we have been held back from many moments where we should have all come together probably more often and had these conversations. And it's terrifying to think that the Antarctic was 40 degrees warmer than average, I think it was, a few days ago. That was just terrifying. I shuddered when I read that. Yeah, and the Arctic was, I believe, 30 degrees warmer. Yeah. And I'm you know, happy to be corrected if those are untrue, but I read it in a national newspaper and thought, whoa.
Unbelievable.
So, yeah, it's unbelievable. But I think the conversations, thankfully, you know, the next generation are having them. And we're having, look, we're having them now. That
exactly.
Counts.
We all have to
this
do
is,
our
this
bit.
Is actually that conversation.
We all need to do a bit. Now, before I let you boys go, I just want to talk about one trend in the food world. And that is the cookbook. And I've got both of your books.
Hey,
look I've got your lovely book, Ollie. It's the Home Cocktail Bible, right? Which is awesome. I love the gimlet in here. Really good. And then Matt Tebbutt, Weekend, which is just like the two books together is just like a dirty weekend away.
Yeah, that's what we went for.
Your salt and pepper lamb chops are just awesome. But the thing is, I've got to ask a question, though.
Yeah.
Matt's on the front cover of his. Ollie, you're not on the front cover of yours.
I'm not pretty.
I think it's a shame, right? You should be on
that. Should be on that cover.
But I've got to ask a question about the photographs you get on the front of cookbooks. Now, either it is a photograph of someone holding something, or you're looking away. Off into the middle distance.
Yeah.
Someone's just cracked a hilarious joke.
There's something funny going on over there.
Well,
I
can't stand that. And I've done it myself.
Sorry, it's me treading on Lego.
That's Chris Terry's fault, so you can blame him.
But what is it about the cookbook? It's always like someone's just said something hilarious about eggs and I've laughed my head off.
Honestly, I find the cover photo the most excruciating part of the book because I hate having my photo taken. And we tried so many when you're looking down the barrel of Chris's lens. And I just look awful. I hate myself. I don't want to do it.
Matt, I've got
that's funny. That's their mother.
I think for your next book, I think there's a very simple way to approach this. So you're looking down the barrel, you're on the cover of the book, you're staring deep into the camera's eyes. One word for you, shirtless. It's a win.
Amazing.
It's a win.
Amazing.
I would buy it.
I've got a book coming out this year, which celebrates 20 years of starting the farm. And Chris Terry, who's an amazing photographer, did the front cover of that.
Uh-huh.
And I had to stand in front of one of our camels holding a cockerel and trying to smile at the same time and get the camel to look at the camera and the cock to look at the camera.
Wow.
So it's me in front of the camera. Me in front of a camel holding a great big cock.
I was going to say, there's a Jimmy Doherty joke in there, isn't there?
There really is.
Oh, dear. We're going to have to crack the front cover conundrum at some point, I think. But listen, chaps, it's been brilliant to catch up with you and have a chat and have a great rest of the show. And then,
thank you very much.
Ollie, you look spectacular. Matt, have a good sleep. You sound tired.
Thank you.
There we are. That was the lovely Ollie and Matt. I think we ended up sounding like three old grumpy men towards the end. Just, I could talk to those guys forever. Absolutely fascinating, hilarious. I hope that.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Didn't take it the wrong way when I called them R2-D2 and C-3PO, but I think you know what I meant. Listen, guys, hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please like, subscribe, leave us some comments wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help new listeners find us. And I'll see you all back here for another episode of On Jimmy's Farm. Right, let's get planting. See you later, guys.